The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Based on your overall game, where do you think you rank among the best receivers in the NFL?
Number one.
Moments ago, Jarvis Landry confirmed he's signing with the New Orleans Saints.
End zone, touchdown! It's Jarvis Landry!
Cannot run!
The Saints see an opening in the NFC.
Alvin Kamara is going to benefit from the surfeit of talent at wide receiver.
Jameis played last year before the injury. He should be able to throw 2, 3, 4 touchdowns a game with this offense.
The Saints think that they can give the Tampa Bay Buccaneers all they can handle in a race for the NFC South title.
Much more to come on the Saints, who have been extremely busy this offseason, plus the latest from Adam Schefter on what Drew Brees' future may hold. Interesting. We say hello and welcome into NFL Live. Dan Orlovsky to my left. We also have the aforementioned Adam Schefter, plus Mina Kimes joining us. I am Field Yates, and we're going to get to the Saints in just a few minutes. But we start with a developing story involving Deshaun Watson. Schefty, what is the latest that we need to know?
Field, the NFL is going to meet with Deshaun Watson this week. And as we mentioned last week, the NFL would like to reach a decision sooner rather than later, preferably sometime this summer, to bring closure to this particular situation that's hung over Deshaun Watson, the National Football League, for quite some time. But he is scheduled to meet with NFL officials this week. And keep in mind, Field, that this will be the first case under the new collective bargaining agreement. So Roger Goodell will not make the ruling. It will come from a recommendation of Lisa Friel, Todd Jones, various NFL officials, not Roger Goodell, as it now exists under the new terms of the collective bargaining agreement with personal conduct policy cases. But that will continue to be expedited this week.
Yeah, a long process, perhaps a critical week ahead for all involved in this matter. And in the latest example that the NFL offseason never sleeps, the Packers made a major investment in one of their best players, that being cornerback Jaire Alexander. And Schefter, you broke the news this morning out of Green Bay. What's the latest there?
Field, it's a 4-year, $84 million deal. You take a look at where that puts Jaire Alexander in relation to the top paid cornerbacks in the game, like Denzel Ward, Jalen Ramsey, Marshawn Lattimore. This is now a new mark for other cornerbacks to go shoot for. But Jaire Alexander had been a priority for the Green Bay Packers. He was a player that they knew they wanted to keep and sign long-term, despite the fact that he played 4 games last year before breaking a bone in his shoulder, coming back to play only 8 plays in the playoffs. But he's somebody that the Packers have identified as a core young player to build around, and now they will do that with Alexander under contract to the Green Bay Packers for the next 5 years through the 2026 season.
And Schefter, as you noted, some cap relief for Green Bay as well. I mean, I think because of the fact that Jaire Alexander played just those 4 games plus 8 plays in the playoffs, that maybe some wonder what kind of player he is right now or forgotten how good he is. Do you think he's worth this top of the market deal?
100%. And if you can hear my dog, I think he disagrees with anyone
on,
who doesn't also agree that Jaire Alexander is one of the best cornerbacks in the league. I would say arguably top three. Incredible in coverage, actually an area that I think he's improved a lot since his days at Louisville. Scheme agnostic, perfect for defensive coordinator Joe Barry's defense, what he does with the emphasis on zone there. And also for Green Bay, Field, there's another benefit, which is doing this contract, because Jaire was going to enter his fifth-year option year, they're able to reduce his cap hit and potentially spend that money on a veteran wide receiver. As you know, there are a few still out there, OBJ, Julio Jones, that I can imagine Green Bay might be targeting.
Well, with Jaire's new money, he can maybe buy some chains, the expensive ones that you're wearing on the show today. Well done. I agree that the interesting thing about Green Bay's defense is it was top 10 last year in the league without Jaire, to Schefter's point, only playing 4 games. And obviously the 2 first-round picks in Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt, they want to add to that defense. And they were top 10 in takeaways, but bottom 10 in pressures. Now, Jaire Alexander doesn't necessarily to the kind of the naked eye add to their pressures, but better coverage certainly will.
Sure.
And if they can continue to be a top 10 defense when it comes to takeaways and add to the pressures, we're talking about a team that could be top five in defense. And with their offense, they're probably going to need to be bona fide Super Bowl contenders.
You know, GMs don't take victory laps. I do wonder if it's worth noting, though, that last year, Brian Gutekunst got dragged as the Aaron Rodgers drama percolated all the way up to the season. A guy in over his head, perhaps not the right man for the job. Should he be fired as the Packers GM? Jaire Alexander, just another example of an awesome player that was brought aboard by Goody. Yeah. This roster is stacked. And Shefty, as we look around the league for the next defensive back that could be paid, is there somebody that is on the horizon to keep an eye on?
Well, Phil, this always happens, right? Every time we see a quarterback sign a big contract, you wonder who the next quarterback is who's going to get paid. Now we're not talking about quarterbacks. We're talking about cornerbacks, defensive backs. You take a look at some of the players who will be in line for new contracts. Minka Fitzpatrick, A.J. Terrell, Derwin James Jr., Trevon Diggs. All these players are going to get paid and paid handsomely. And they're looking at the numbers that came in today on Jaire Alexander and saying, where's mine? Because you know that some of these deals will be getting done. These will be players that I would think their teams will try to see if they can get new deals done with this summer, certainly before the season. There's always that rush to get deals done before the 2022 regular season begins. And those are some of the players right there that'll be in line for some big paydays trying to break the mark that Jaire Alexander set today.
Yeah, we're kind of moving into extension season after a wild and crazy NFL offseason up to this point. And let's get back to the Saints. Speaking of wild and crazy offseason, they had a crazy one involving Sean Payton deciding to step away, at least for now, from coaching. He's been replaced by their former defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, the favorite going into that process. Earlier this month, they signed hometown Tyrann Mathieu to a three-year deal. The New Orleans native is one of two defensive backs to earn three first-team All-Pro selections since 2015, the other being Jalen Ramsey. And then after re-signing Jameis Winston, New Orleans gave Jameis some much-needed passing game targets. Mm. They drafted Chris Olave, and they recently, as we mentioned, signed former LSU star Jarvis Landry. And then there's the tweet from former Saints quarterback Drew Brees yesterday saying, quote, despite speculation from media about my future this fall, I'm currently undecided. I may work for NBC. I may play football again. I may focus on business and philanthropy. I may train for the pickleball tour, senior golf tour, coach my kids, or all the above. I'll let you know. Pickleball tour sounds pretty good to me, as far as the golf thing. But, Shefty, we'll have to start with you. What are you hearing about the latest with Drew Brees' future?
Listen, the Saints know that Drew Brees is capable of anything, but there haven't been any conversations between the Saints and Drew Brees about a potential comeback. And today, Dennis Allen at a charity golf tournament in New Orleans said that he thought that Drew Brees was talking in jest about a potential return to football. And then there's the matter of the fact that this is a cap-strapped team that is committed to Jameis Winston for the upcoming season. So it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense logically to think that Drew Brees could be coming back to the Saints. Everybody would love to see it. Be fascinating to see how it happened. We've already seen one NFC South quarterback come out of retirement this offseason. Maybe another one potentially could do it at some point in time. But right now, that's not something the Saints think is at the front burner.
Yeah, my brain can't process multiple unretirements in one offseason. Let's put Drew Brees aside for right now, Mina. Is this Saints team good enough to compete with the Bucs that Shefty just mentioned for that NFC South crown?
I think the team is. I think the team, the roster, is actually a Super Bowl caliber roster. But I have a, I guess, question about whether they have a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. And I say that as someone, you remember, in Drew Brees' final season, because of his limitations pushing the ball downfield, I actually thought Jameis Winston should start back then. And when he did play last year before getting hurt in week 7, he definitely showed some improvements. I mean, there's been a lot of emphasis on the only 3 interceptions. Obviously, that's been a struggle for him in the past. But he was not perfect, completing under 59% of his passes, which was 31st in the NFL. He also struggled sometimes with accuracy, throwing the ball downfield. Now, a lot of that had to do with the limitations the Saints had at pass catcher, and that's obviously an area that they've improved greatly this offseason, especially with Michael Thomas coming back. But if we're going to call this Saints team like a legitimate contender or say that they can overthrow the Bucs, I think Winston needs to take another leap, even from what we saw last season.
Well, my pushback would be they've already overthrown the Bucs the past 4 times they played in the regular season. Mm-hmm. You know, so like the team has shown that they are a better, certainly in that one-on-one matchup, I think the if Jameis Winston plays like average football, they can absolutely be playing for the division title, which is December 5th. They play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Monday Night Football. And I think it could be for the division. Listen, Jameis was really good last year without all those pieces. I won't say really good. He made big jumps last year without all those pieces. Now we're adding those three pass catchers in Landry, Michael Thomas, and Chris Olave. We should honestly expect the best performance out of Jameis Winston. I will say this. I think the season comes down to their left tackle, Trevor Penning, the first-round draft pick out of Northern Iowa. I don't know. I don't want to pretend I'm a dominant offensive line mind, but I know this. Look at the Saints' history in drafting offensive linemen over like the last 10 years. These guys have become studs. Pete, Armstead, Ramczyk, McCoy. Ruiz is not what the other four are, but a good, solid pro. If Trevor Penning, and they don't miss. It's not like they have two or three misses in there. That's their draft class outside of like a sixth-round pick. If he is what they have been over the last 10 years drafting-wise, this team's going to be playing for the division title on December 5th.
Well, Dan, and of course there are questions about Jameis Winston coming off the torn ACL last year, but the Saints believe he should be ready to go for this year. Doesn't seem to be a big hang-up. He is on track right now, which is encouraging for this organization. And if he's not, then maybe they could call up Drew Brees, who happens to be in the area. But right now, the indications are that Jameis Winston is on track. He's getting ready for the season. I think they believe he'll be ready for it.
And perhaps part of the value in signing Andy Dalton to that one-year deal as well, some insurance in case Jameis is not ready. We mentioned the Bucs and Tom Brady. Well, they're going to be tested right out of the gate this season, as no team has a tougher four-game stretch to begin the year than the Bucs. Three of their first four opponents won at least 12 games last season. The only team that didn't is the Saints, we just talked about. And Dan mentioned they've won four of their last five games against the Bucs since Tom Brady joined Tampa Bay. So, Mina, when you see those four games to start the year, are you concerned at all?
Not really. And that's less of a denigration of those teams and more of expression of how good I think the Bucs are. I think with the Rams, they're neck and neck for the conference. You look at the players they were able to bring back, obviously including Tom Brady. Unless his play falls off a cliff, which I will never call as a personal policy, I still think he's capable of beating at least three, if not two of those teams, even though, as Dan mentioned correctly, they have had weird trouble with the Saints in the past.
Yeah, I don't care because the Bucs are in the playoffs. They are in the playoffs.
Now.
The first 4 weeks don't matter. They're going to be in the playoffs. As the season goes, I'll tell you this. Can Russell Gage bridge the gap to Chris Godwin getting healthy, the free agent from Atlanta? Can he bridge that gap to Chris Godwin getting healthy? I've mentioned that December 5th, Week 13 game against the Saints. That's going to be huge for their division title on Monday Night Football. Shaq Mason, does he replace those two all-pro guards in Ali Marpet and Alex Kappa? Those are the questions. Does Gronk come back? But they're a playoff football team.
Yeah, I think in the NFC, right? It's just such a different conference in the AFC where every single team has to have some level of confidence in the AFC. We got plenty ahead here on NFL Live. The Bills' offense still led by Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, but they will have a new offensive coordinator. Will the Bills look wildly different on offense this fall? Dan says yes. Buddy. And Chefsy certainly isn't done. He's back with the latest on where we may see Odell Beckham Jr. playing next season. Plus, he has new information on who from the Patriots coaching staff will be Mac Jones' right-hand man. Thought I was nearing the
finish line. That's where you're wrong. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Huge week of featured events over on ESPN Plus. The Ultimate Fighter with coaches Juliana Pena and Amanda Nunez. Also, Vince's Places with Vince Carter. The first round of the PGA Championship from Southern Hills in Tulsa begins Thursday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Dan and I will be locked in on that. Plus, the German Cup final is Saturday afternoon with the kickoff of 2 Eastern from Berlin's Olympic Stadium. It is another stacked week ahead on ESPN+. So the Lions entered the 2022 NFL draft with 2 first-round picks and then walked away with 2 of the most talented players in this year's class, first taking local product Aiden Hutchinson out of Michigan. He's a defensive end, of course. Then they traded up all the way to pick number 12 to snag speedy former Alabama wide receiver Jameson Williams. The guy could end up being the best offensive player in this year's class. But speaking of Hutchinson, he said over the weekend at rookie minicamp, quote, "It's been a lot of months of talk and a lot of rah-rah, but now we're out here getting the work in, which is what I do. A lot of good people here. I think we definitely have got the right people in place to start winning some ball games." End quote. All right, so their first round pick is already talking about wins. Dan, of course, your former team for a long time is this Detroit Lions. You brought it up, not me. But let's talk offense for a minute here. Is this roster good enough to win games, in your opinion?
Absolutely. Okay. I think, first of all, Jared Goff, their quarterback, played better last year than people are probably giving him credit for. And I think the second thing is, if you look at this roster, it looks a lot like the 2017-2018 roster that he had with the Los Angeles Rams. Really good offensive line. Probably a top 3 to top 5 unit in the league. T.J. Hockenson at tight end. Swift is that Todd Gurley type of tailback that you can throw him the football with. Amon-Ra St. Brown, really good slot receiver. Jameis Williams, got to get healthy. There's no question about that. So we're talking about a team that's got a ton of talent. D.J. Chark is a receiver that we've been on high on the show for 2 years. So I think the roster talent-wise is one that's going to ask a quarterback to not be a playmaker, just a play operator.
Okay.
Just a play executor. And that's what Jared Goff does well. It's what he really did in 2017 and 18. So I think that if he plays to the level that he did last year, given the talent that they have, this is an offense that can score a lot of points this year.
You know, Mina, you and I have talked off camera about fascinating rebuilds and how teams go about them. What do you make of how the Lions have approached their roster construction?
I absolutely love it. You know that saying, you got to learn to love yourself before you can love someone else? That's the Detroit Lions, because everything they've done, about it, over the last 2 off seasons, has made this team an incredibly attractive landing place for either a disgruntled quarterback or veteran, as we've seen a lot of movement in that area over the last couple of years, or the perfect spot for a rookie. I mean, everything Dan just said, usually teams that are drafting near the top, like the Lions have recently, do not have good offensive lines. It's something we've seen a lot with rookie quarterbacks being thrown to the fire. The Lions have an excellent offensive line, a super solid running back, a group of pass catchers that's not only incredibly talented, but I think has diverse and complementary skills. My only concern for this team going forward is, what if they win too many games this year that puts them out of reach for one of the, you know, top rookies? Although I will say they've got that extra first, and I suspect they'd be willing to do whatever it takes to get in position to grab one.
Words no one in the Detroit area has ever thought they would hear. Well, you win too many games this year for what you really want.
It's so true.
This is my thought on the, like, the new roster building in the NFL. First of all, if you look at the young quarterbacks, or most of them who have come into the league over the last 4 or 5 years, that have played really well early on individually and had team success, they were guys that teams who had good rosters and then in the draft went up to go get them. I think of Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. I think of Buffalo with Josh Allen. I think Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes. Those teams were playoff teams or playoff caliber teams, and they went to go get the quarterback. So if you're the Lions, one of your problems is you haven't really attacked winning on a day-to-day basis over the last 20 years. Okay. You have the talent now to go do that. Don't worry about the quarterback. Go win games and then find a way to go get a quarterback with first-round picks of the future.
Yeah, I suspect they'd make a strong effort to do that, especially what we've seen, you know, over the last 2 years. But I cannot emphasize enough, Dan, how important I think this Detroit offensive line is. Last year, you know, we had this all-time rookie quarterback class. I thought more of them, personally, I thought, would play well than they did. I significantly underestimated the impact that playing behind a terrible offensive line would have on some of those rookies.
Yes.
Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence struggling, Zach Wilson. Meanwhile, Mac Jones playing behind a good line in New England had a very good rookie season. So I think if you're Detroit, you do. right way.
And I think the last thing I would say is this. Do you remember Dak Prescott's rookie year when he played behind that dominant offensive line? I'm not saying the Lions' offensive line is going to be that, but that's what this offense could look like. They're not good. Only this year for Jared Goff, but for a quarterback of the future if he goes there.
Optimism surrounding the Detroit Lions. This is the kind of breath of fresh air that you can only get here on NFL
Live. I'm nervous.
Hey, coming up, Shefty is back with us, and he's got the latest on where OBJ could be playing. Plus, what about the Vegas Raiders? Can this team, are they ready to take that next step in a very, very competitive AFC West? Mina has some thoughts on where they might stack up.
In a terribly tough division. They could go one.
Matt Ryan has been traded to the Colts.
Stephon Gilmore goes to Indianapolis.
Then you get the pass rush. You add that all in, they might overtake the Titans.
We're already a playoff team, and Derrick Henry is phenomenal. But ultimately, people ain't winning Super Bowls because of their running back.
The Eagles acquiring wide receiver A.J. Brown from the Titans in a blockbuster trade.
You know, kept thinking like it's just a bad dream, but that's where we're at.
The AFC South looks like it could be a two-team race, again, between the Titans and the Colts. The Titans have won the division each of the last two seasons. They were the number one seed in the playoffs last year, but they were upset by the Bengals in their playoff opener. How will Ryan Tannehill bounce back after throwing three interceptions in that loss? He hit him hard. His former top target, A.J. Brown, was traded to the Eagles, and the Titans draft his potential successor in Malik Willis. The Colts hope the addition of Matt Ryan will lead Indy to their first division title. It's 2014. How is that possible? On defense, they added pass rusher Yannick Ngakoue, then signed cornerback Stephon Gilmore to a two-year deal. And, Dan, we love schedule simulations here on NFL Live. So let's go through these two teams, play a little game of win or lose, and see where we land. We're going to start with Tennessee.
I'm going to start quickly with Tennessee. I'm going to go, okay, week one, you're going to beat the Giants.
Okay.
You go on the road to Buffalo, lose.
Tough one.
I'm going to say you beat the Raiders, though, at home. Go on the road, divisional opponent against the Colts, and lose, and get the Commanders on a win. Then you got your bye, right?
Yep.
At home, I'm going to say you beat the Colts.
Yep.
You beat the Texans.
Okay.
Now, I want to finish the season before I get to the meat of it. The last three games, I'm going to go win, win, win. So right now, you're sitting 8-2 out of those 10 games, and you feel
great, right?
Dude, there is a brutal seven-game stretch in really the heart of their season.
Okay.
At the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's a tough one.
I'm going to say that's a loss. Broncos, I'm going to say that's a loss.
Tough.
At Green Bay, I'm going to say that's a loss.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, I'm going to say that's a loss. At the Eagles is like a very swing point to me. I'm going to give the Jaguars game a win. So right now, you sit at 9-6, and these two games are going to determine if they get into the playoffs or not. I think that they go to the Chargers and lose. I think this game really determines their season, whether they win or get in.
Yeah, feels
I'm
like
going
it.
To give them a win against the Philadelphia Eagles to get to 10-7. I could very easily see this team getting to like 8-9 or 9-8. That's a generous 10-7. That seven-game stretch is brutal.
Yeah, you know the thing? I think they're probably Titans fans and Titans players out there saying, dude, we had everything go wrong for us injury-wise last year, and we still have the number one seed of the AFC. They found ways to win, but it won't be easy this upcoming year. Let's go to Indianapolis. And this is a team that it feels like they've been in the division mix for a while, but I'd say they haven't won since 2014. How do they do it this year?
Well, I'm going to go on the road to Houston and say, let's get a win. Okay, then at the road
strong.
To Jaguars, naturally you go win. No. I learned a lesson from week 17 last year. I'm going to say that's a loss on the road versus the Chiefs.
Okay.
I'm going to give a loss versus the Titans at home. We had plagued that in as a win. You go on the road versus Denver.
Okay.
I think Denver's going to be very good. That's a loss. You come home, get back to 500 with a win versus Jacksonville, but then you go down to Tennessee and lose. And then you're going to play the Commanders. I'm going to say win versus the Commanders. Now the next stretch I'm going to leave blank all the way up until the bye week.
Okay.
I go at the Vikings to end the season. I say loss. I'm saying this is going to be a great game, and they're going to win that game at home on the road versus the Giants and then the Texans. So, again, you sit at 7-5.
Not bad.
Here's the heart of that season that is going to determine if they actually can get into the playoffs.
That is good.
I'm going to say on the road at New England, they're going to get a win because
huge.
They're a physical group.
Okay.
On the road versus the Raiders, I'm going to say loss. I'm going to say you beat Philadelphia because you're at home. You beat the Steelers. You get the 10-6. I'm going to say at the Dallas Cowboys, and this pains me. I'm going to say they go on the road versus Dallas and actually lose that game because I expect Dallas' speed to be a big determining factor. But again, sitting at 10-7, I could very easily see this being an 11-win football team.
All right, so 10-7 for both teams, your projected record. I'd be curious what Mina thinks here. I have to do the math on division records and who would actually win the tiebreaker there.
It's May.
Okay, it's May. We'll get through through. But Mina, your thoughts here on Dan's assessment of these two teams forecasting their schedule?
I think it was pretty accurate. I haven't done the math either, but I think the Colts win the division. I suspect I Dan believes the same after all this shakes out. And look, 10-7 is what it's going to take for the Titans to be a wild card team. That's how good the AFC is. But, you know, they've undoubtedly taken a bit of a step back, losing A.J. Brown. They have made some quietly good under-the-radar signings like Robert Woods that went fairly unnoticed, or Austin Hooper. I understand the tight end didn't live up to his contract in Cleveland, but I think will help Tennessee as well. But Indianapolis just made more improvements. You know, they were so weak last year, not only at passing the ball at times, but also stopping the pass. You go out, you get Stephon Gilmore and Ngakoue to rush the passer, and then bringing in Matt Ryan, who's an improvement at quarterback. I think they're the best team in the division.
Yeah, it feels like the Colts are banking on a lot of players who have been there and done that before. It feels like Tennessee is perhaps banking on some young players taking a big step forward, of course, including Traylon Burks. Let's get Shefty back in here with some news and notes. And Adam, let's get things going here with the latest on a big signing out in Green Bay.
Well, Phil, the Green Bay Packers wanted to get a deal done with their young cornerback, Jaire Alexander, and today they are finalizing a four-year, $84 million contract extension that includes $30 million in signing bonus money, the most by any defensive back in NFL history. This $21 million average makes Alexander the highest-paid cornerback in the game today. Meanwhile, there are a number of high-profile free agents out there right now, none any more so than Odell Beckham Jr., who still continues to rehab that knee injury that he suffered in the Super Bowl. Going to be a help for a contender at some point this year, but he may miss the first half of the year. It's certainly possible, coming off that knee injury, he will not be ready for the start of the season, but he will help somebody later in the year. And today, Joe Judge, the former head coach of the New York Giants, said today that he has been working with Mac Jones. Keep in mind, Phil, that New England lost Josh McDaniels, its offensive coordinator, to the head coaching job in Las Vegas. The Patriots have been looking for an offensive coordinator, people wondering who's going to do it. Well, it looks like Joe Judge is going to have a primary role working closely with Mac Jones this upcoming season, and he will help try to fill the role created, the void created with Josh McDaniels going to Las Vegas.
Patriots hoping for a big year two leap from Mac Jones. Shefty and your dogs also joining us here on NFL Live. But let's end here, Adam.
A lot of dogs today.
Much more serious. No, yeah, it's always good when you have dogs on NFL Live. But what more can you tell us about the latest with Deshaun Watson's meeting with the NFL?
Phil, he is scheduled to meet later this week with NFL officials. Keep in mind, we reported last week that the league would like to make a decision as soon as it possibly can, hopefully at some point this summer, on whether or not there will be discipline for Deshaun Watson. This will be a test case because it is the first case under the NFL's new personal conduct policy under the new CBA, in which basically Lisa Friel, Todd Jones, NFL officials will make the ruling and determine whether or not there will be discipline. Used to be that Roger Goodell was the man who made that decision. Not anymore. That decision will belong to others, and the league would like to make a decision as soon as it possibly can.
A significant situation that we'll monitor all week. Shefty, great stuff as always here on NFL Live. We are not done here on NFL Live, and we've seen a number of NFL players take their talents to the golf course. A former MVP was latest hit the links over the weekend. Stick around to see what our guy Dano thinks about the newest golfer's short game. And speaking of two-sport quarterbacks, Dan, you got a softball swinging you like Josh Allen? This dude rakes.
That dude, one, is enormous. Two, that ball, oh my god.
Where is
goodness.
It? Has it landed yet?
That ball was absolutely mashed.
That thing landed in Toronto.
Was that Josh Allen or Vladimir Guerrero Jr.?
Hard to tell the difference.
Hey, that's a good swing. Did you see that swing?
Was that like, was nice.
And that ball that's went moonshot.
We call that teach tape right there, Dan.
That's me versus Mina.
Wow.
Softballs.
Wow. Not the truth.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rookie camps officially ended yesterday, so Daniel, give me the name of a hugely impactful rookie on a playoff team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Arizona Cardinal rookie Trey McBride, their tight end from Colorado State they took in the second round. DeAndre Hopkins is not going to be available for the first 6 weeks, so I think we're going to see him and Zach Ertz be a really big part of this offense with Hollywood Brown not necessarily running as much for wide receiver set, but really getting those two tight ends on the field, a little bit more of a physical run game, but using those as the pass catchers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, this is the best tight end duo that Arizona has had in recent memory, yeah. Dan, between him and Zach Ertz. And that was my reaction as soon as the Hopkins suspension came down. Cliff Kingsbury has to find a way to evolve this offense, because he's not going to use 10 personnel anymore with this wide receiver group. And the most talented group that he can put on the field includes these two tight ends, because Trey McBride was the best tight end in this draft, in my opinion.
An offense that's been accused of being stagnant in recent years, perhaps going to see some change. Amina, your turn. Let's pick an impactful rookie on a playoff team.
All right, so you know I love the Chargers, despite their betrayal of me, and I'm going to go with their first-round draft pick this year. Zion Johnson out of Boston College, a mauler, powerful lower half, just so athletic on the move, and now gets to help a Chargers offensive line that took a big leap forward last year on the left side with the drafting of Rashawn Slater, who's one of the best draft picks they've had. Now they're improving the right side, and I love this because they're not saying, hey, Justin Herbert, go do it all. You can move. They're saying, we want to protect you because we know we can win Super Bowls with you.
Yeah, protect the quarterback's backside and then protect the quarterback right up the middle of the offensive line. With Corey Linsley, who they paid a ton of money to from Green Bay in free agency last year, and now Zion Johnson proves to be one of those dominant guards. We're talking about a passing game that is going to have a pocket for a 6'5", 250-pound quarterback with a rocket arm that is going to be very difficult to contend against.
Yeah, they figure out that right tackle spot, and they could be cooking out there in L.A., especially in a very loaded division. So Brian Daboll, he's now the head coach of the New York Giants. That means the Bills' offense will be under new leadership this year. It's Ken Dorsey, former quarterback's coach, who takes over as the coordinator this season. Dan, I know it's a person who's been there for a long time in Dorsey, but do you expect this Bills offense to look the same this year?
No, I expect
really?
It to be very different. Yeah, I
How
think
so?
We're going to see a personnel presentation difference. This is a team under Dable that ran a lot of 10 personnel, one back, no tight ends, or 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, spread it out, right? I think the two reasons why I feel this way, outside of Ken Dorsey now being the play caller, are James Cook, the running back they drafted out of Georgia, and then O.J. Howard, who they signed as another tight end from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think of it like this, Field. Imagine when Ken Dorsey goes, okay, both those tight ends, you guys are in the game, but we're also going to put the three tight ends or the three wide receivers in the game as well. So you got Jameson Crowder and Gabe Davis, Stephon Diggs, O.J. Howard, and Dawson Knox on the field. Now the defense is going, okay, that's the huddle. And then they break the huddle, and they could be in what looks to be an 11 personnel or an empty set. Or even this. Yeah. Imagine those three wide receivers are on the – excuse me, where they put Stephon Diggs on the field with the two tight ends and then Singletary and James Cook. That looks like a run personnel grouping. Break the huddle, we're in a pass set. That's going to be really difficult to match up against if your defense is playing against the Bills.
Yeah, especially because James Cook, the running back they drafted, he can run routes.
Correct.
He has got speed. So you put him on the field and you are not exactly sure what you're getting there. And I think that's the name of the game, unpredictability. That is what Dan described. It's what Buffalo needs to bring to the table this season. And I'll say it's something that we started to see from them at the end of last season. Because you remember week one, they refused to run, like absolutely refused to run the football. But by the end of the season, the offense changed a bit. And I went back into my notes because I was trying to remember what game it was. But Dan, of course, knew off the top of his head. In the Patriots game, I wrote down Reggie Gilliam, their fullback, had the most snaps in that one game than he had had the prior 2 months. That was the offense involving in response to defenses saying, we know you're going to pass the ball. We know if it's an RPO, Josh Allen isn't going to give. He's going to throw it. We're going to do light boxes all day. So now the Bills, with the personnel changes that they've made, have the people to then sort of strike back and say, okay, well, you don't know what we're going to do now. Exactly. And that's what makes a great offense.
Well, no matter how many changes they have, I think we can all agree this offense is going to be very, very good. We're going to stay in Buffalo, where there was horrific news over the weekend. 10 people were shot and killed, and 3 others were injured Saturday at a grocery store in a predominantly black neighborhood. The attack was committed by an 18-year-old white man and has been called racially motivated violent extremism by authorities. On Sunday, members of the Bills were in town participating in a charity softball game hosted by Safety Micah Hyde. The long-planned event was nearly canceled in the wake of Saturday's shooting, but Hyde and his teammates, including quarterback Josh Allen, said they wanted to show support for the community.
Heartbreak, a sense of this weird feeling that happened. Heart goes out, you know, for victims and their families. And, you know, we really haven't talked to the team yet. We'll be in the building tomorrow. I'm sure we'll talk about it and figure out a way to help, you know, the situation, help the families out. It's something that, you know, you never think it's going to happen in your community. And when it does, you know, it hits home.
Well, I heard the news yesterday and simply shocked. I still can't believe it. When there's hate in the world, you know, you kind of erase it with love, and coming out here today and, you know, showing the community love and love to the youth, love to the community, love to the foundation. I guess that's the way to combat it.
Hyde, whose foundation raised over $200,000, says he is committed to donating a portion of those proceeds to the families of the victims. More on If Alive is ahead.
Vegas added to the defense this offseason. They signed Chandler Jones.
Chandler Jones' specialty is getting the ball out of quarterbacks' hands.
Hit by Jones. Chandler Jones making some money.
The biggest move of them all came when the Packers traded Devontae Adams to the Raiders.
It makes them one of the most explosive offenses in the entire NFL.
Leaping grab Devontae Adams.
Derek Carr got a nice payday from Las Vegas.
This guy is the unquestioned leader in Vegas.
I can finish and just do what I set out to do, and that is to win a championship.
The new look Raiders have one of the toughest schedules to begin the 2022 season. 4 of their first 5 opponents had a winning record last year. The only team that didn't is the Broncos. They had a Russell Wilson this offseason. Las Vegas will play 3 division games within the first 5 weeks, including a trip to Kansas City in Week 5 on Monday Night Football on ESPN, of course. So, Mina, if the Raiders get out to a slow start early in the season, what would you guess will be the reason for that?
It will be because they weren't able to stop the passing attacks of the other teams in their own division. I have a lot of confidence in this Raiders offense, but the defense, while they did add Chandler Jones, it remains largely unchanged, and I still look at the secondary, and I don't see them keeping up with the rest of those offenses in their division. To me, that would be why they struggle, if they do struggle.
Dan, it feels like perhaps the offense will need to carry this team, especially early. If that's the case, what unit has to step up the most and have a major impact?
I actually think it's the running backs, and I think they'll be the ones that benefit the most from Devontae Adams being on the team. I think that now with Devontae Adams and their 2 tight ends of Darren Waller and Fabian Monroe, or Foster Moreau, excuse me, that they cut the field in half better than anybody in the league. I would call basically every play with my tight ends on one side of the field, Devontae on the other side of the field, and go, defense, which way do you want to lean? You want to lean towards Devontae because you can't cover him one-on-one? Great, my tight ends will eat you up. You want to lean towards the tight ends because you feel they're so good in the pass game? Devontae's going to eat you up one-on-one. I think we're going to talk a lot about the Raiders offense the same way we have over the Chiefs offense over the past couple years. So much too high shell. Now, we did that for a lot in the NFL, but I think we're going to hear so much of the too high shell against
so
this
much.
Offense because of it. Josh Jacobs, Kenyon Drake, and even their draft pick in the 4th round, Zamir White from Georgia, who's a big bruising back. I think they're going to pound the football a lot in Las Vegas.
It's crazy. We're talking about all these teams such a way right now. Someone's going to have to finish 4th in the AFC West. I'm still wrapping my head around that idea. And you'd mentioned Devontae Adams, of course. Well, some of the best wide receivers in the NFL have been traded this offseason. Yeah. It's an indication of how challenging it is to pay top money for both a quarterback and a wide receiver. So Ryan Tannehill, he has the highest cap hit amongst quarterbacks. Titans traded A.J. Brown to the Eagles. Patrick Mahomes is the second highest cap hit. Of course, the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins after they weren't able to agree to a long-term extension. Aaron Rodgers has the 5th highest cap hit after the team restructured his contract. Green Bay still had to trade Devontae Adams. to the Raiders back in March. So, I mean, it feels like this is a trend. Why is it a trend right now, though?
Yeah. Well, obviously, there's unique circumstances for every team and every player, player like Adams, who actually wants to go somewhere else. But I think this is being driven by a couple of things, both from below and above. From below, we talk about this all the time, wide receivers are better than ever. This goes all the way back down to 7-on-7, up through college.
Yeah.
If you look at the couple of the last really four drafts in the first and second round, the hit rate on these wide receivers, their ability to come in the NFL and be impactful from day one is really unprecedented. And then from above field, you know, you alluded to this, wide receiver contracts, really starting with the DeAndre Hopkins extension, Bill Barnwell did a great piece on this for ESPN, are of course exploding. So if you're a team with a highly paid quarterback who you believe can make wide receivers better on his own, and you're looking at those price tags and you're looking at the success of these rookie wide receivers coming into the NFL, I think it's more likely than ever that you're going to go for one of the younger players.
Yeah, but that's why the Bills are such a fascinating case study this year, because they do have the extremely highly paid quarterback and highly paid wide receiver. Now, it's not that you can't do it this way and win a championship. We just have never seen it. And it'll be interesting. Here's the reality, because once you go into this world, if you're Buffalo, every front office, or if Buffalo is successful, every front office is going to try to replicate it. I think you got to ask yourself two questions. Do we draft well, and do we develop well? And you got to be honest about that, because once you allocate all that money to those two positions, if you don't draft relatively well, your roster is going to be weaker. Or if you draft well and you don't develop, or your staff doesn't develop well, then your roster is going to at some point feel it. I don't think that, because let me be clear, Buffalo has a great quarterback. Mm. That's why they did it. And Stephon is a great wide receiver. I think the more likely issue will be this, Mina, when organizations have good quarterbacks and they pay them great quarterback money. Mm. And they have a good receiver and they pay him a great receiver money. That's when I think that you can really start to get yourself into a problem when it comes to that situation.
Yeah, and I think Buffalo is unique in another way, which is Josh Allen himself really made the leap when Stephon Diggs joined the Bills. I mean, it's not the only reason why he made the leap. You know, coaching, organization, Josh Allen's efforts himself, of course. But I feel like Buffalo simply could not move on from Diggs. Not that they were even considering doing so, because of how closely he is linked to Josh Allen. And, of course, the fact that they expect to contend for a Super Bowl this season.
Josh Allen made his leap with Stephon. Lamar made his leap with Mark Andrews. Dak Prescott made his leap with Amari Cooper. Mm. Patrick Mahomes made his leap with Tyreek Hill. So all these young quarterbacks, or even great quarterbacks, are going to need a bona fide rock star wide receiver. Some organizations are going to say, let's pay the proven veteran, or let's use picks to get him. And some are going to say, let's take the flyer on this young college kid that we think is a Jamar Chase or a Justin Jefferson. But if you do the former, which is pay the veteran and you've got the expensive quarterback, you better draft really well, and you better develop really well.
And if you don't, you're going to have some difficult decisions to make. I've always said, though, we don't pay general managers for the easy decisions. We pay them for the difficult ones. And some of these teams that have double-dipped at quarterback and wide receiver at the top of the market could have to make some difficult decisions down the line. We always have time for one more thing before we go. And Lamar Jackson posted about his first round on the golf course over the weekend. Here's what he had to say. Dress code? Check. Everything else? Tiger Woods? I need a couple pointers. So we don't have Tiger Woods. We do have our guy, Dan Orlovsky, at the touchscreen. Dan, any pointers here for Lamar?
No.
All right. So first of all, I'm going to start here both with the tee on the green. And that is not a putter. It looks to be a 7-iron. So if the tee is used for a ball marker, I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it. Like, let's play fast golf. Let's go.
Fair enough.
If we're putting the ball on the tee, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
He's probably good enough of a player where he could putt with a actual iron instead of using a putter.
Yep.
But Lamar, work on the putter, okay? Keep the palm going towards your target. Second thing is this. Field, my eye goes to this area right here. This is a little bit of a ridge right here. Lamar, when you see the ridge right there, you got to anticipate that your ball is just going to turn a little bit, right? That the golf ball is just going to turn, because I look at where this ball ended up. I'm assuming that's his ball. That's the amateur side, Lamar. You left it beneath the hole. As great of a football player you are, you got to play the bend of that ridge and put the ball so you can. I like the flagging too. Pace of play is good, Lamar. Just call me, hit me up on DM. We'll get you some lessons.
All right, coming up on SC with SVP tonight, Dan Orlovsky and Scott Van Pelt will talk golf for approximately an hour.
Pendulum.
NFL Live, back tomorrow.
Pendulum.